Welcome, everyone, to this latest edition of the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Jim.
Hello.
And on the show this week, we have several guests, actually. This is the most amount of guests we have ever had, beating our previous record of two. We, this week, are going to talk about the game Galactos. Now, if y'all don't know what Galactos is, I previewed it on the site a while ago. It's a game where you fly cupcakes and waffles as spaceships, destroying motherships that are turkeys and cakes and things. And it's crazy fun because since the game has kind of lovely, simplistic, cel-shaded graphics, there's a ton of crap on screen at once, and like there are dozens and dozens of ships. It's great fun. It's kind of frantic. But we're talking to some of the folks behind the game tonight, because I'll be honest, ever since we started this thing, Jim has been like, get the cupcake guy on, or whatever you've been saying, like, get the guy with the cupcake game on, or something like that. You've been hounding me for a while now. So we have John O'Meara.
O'Meara.
Thank you. We have John O'Meara, Matthew Pablo, David Wickman, and Mignon Cramp.
That's right.
Okay, woo, I said it right. So let's go one by one, and we'll have everyone say what they do in the game. John, what's your thing with the game? What do you do?
I do a lot of engine stuff and graphics. I also do some gameplay. Currently I also do a lot of other things, like try to do marketing, although not very well, sadly. And occasionally recruited new team members, so forth.
Cool. Matthew, what about you? What do you do for Galactos?
I started out by providing a music track for them, and then we started talking. Then it kind of turned into me actually producing and composing a music for the game.
Oh.
And it actually got to the point where now I'm starting to do some of the audio work too, which we're still working on.
I do like the music for the game. Very epic. I really like it.
Thank you.
David, what about you? What do you do for the game?
I am our other programmer. I have done the AI and quite a bit of the gameplay programming.
Okay, very cool. And Mignon, what do you do for Galactos?
I guess I would be the concept character artist and also do some of the icon buttons for in-game. So the art that's in there is slowly being replaced.
Oh, basically, 2D art.
Oh, so you drew the little cupcake guy with the cigar who does the tutorial? That was you?
No, he's replaced.
What?
I'm sorry.
Oh,
like the,
I do.
The old cupcake guy was drawn by Alyssa Creno. Who's someone who was helping us back in Capstone. They took an independent study, and they did a lot of work, including a lot of the initial art.
The art at the initial screen where you click to select the mission and to actually start the game, I did that.
Okay, that's nice. That's good stuff.
And the characters were going to be updated from actual food people to actual, like, people, kind of like Adventure Time art, except with,
oh,
like...
Oh, very cool.
With, like, ice cream cone armor types of things with little peeps
should,
on their shoulders.
Should link the image.
Okay.
For Maximum Lulz.
Alright, I will.
Alright, so guys, talk to me about where the idea and the inspiration for this game came from. Give me some of its history.
So, it started off as me and David's graduate capstone project. Mm-hmm. We attended RIT and majored in game design development. Cool. Basically, it was initially going to be a hard sci-fi-ish like title thing, where it's going to be much more realistic and not really funny. Partway through, we successfully recruited some artists, and they wanted to know the polygon budget. So I decided to make a cylinder test shape, which I could just add more faces to rather easily. And that sort of looked like an Oreo cookie. So David suggested that, hey, those look like Oreos. And then, as a joke, we kind of, like, played that up. I can find that video in a minute. But
yeah, we colored them, added a normal map.
I don't think we have the video of the normal map one, but we did a lot of fun stuff with it. And then Professor Schwartz was like, you know, you should go with the food theme. So we had a vote, and food won. Ironically enough, me and David were the ones who had voted against it. But in retrospect, that's probably good we lost.
Yeah. No, that's yeah, it is good you lost. Because I remember the first time I saw this on, I think it was Greenlight, and I was like, what the what? But, you know, I'd never seen anything. And I played a lot of space games, and I've never seen anything where the spaceships are cupcakes. So that was awesomely creative. So how long have you guys been working on this?
This is about 2 years now-ish. I want to say probably a little bit less, sort of.
I think it's closer to a year and a half.
Yeah, you're right, okay. A year and a half.
So it's still fairly early in the development cycle then.
Yeah.
But it's definitely coming along, because like I was saying, the game, the version I played back in January, because I wrote about it on the site, wasn't like complete, but the gameplay was pretty solid. And it was very frantic, and I loved that. So, kudos to that. Kudos to
one of our original goals was for epic space battles, and I think we pretty much achieved that.
Yeah, pretty early in, we had quite a lot of ships flying around and in an early prototype, so it was good to get started, and yeah, we basically just have been building up from there.
Cool.
So is there a backstory that's going on here? It's like the junk food versus the healthy food or whatever? Because I noticed there was like some capital ships that looked like turkeys and
it's,
things that were going on. So
it's like dinner versus dessert.
So okay. The way we started off, it's
that makes perfect sense now. That makes
And the Prometheans that created the Stargates but are long gone are the Twinkies. The dead race. And they...
The Twinkies are coming back. Now, what were you saying? I think that was John or David. What were you guys saying?
So, yeah, it's basically just started off as the classic battle between dinner and dessert, which is better and which do people prefer. But we recently acquired a writer person. They unfortunately are not able to make it to this, but they're going to be coming up with something a little more in-depth for us, and that's going to go into deepening the campaign.
Now, is the campaign fully story, is it linear-based, story-based, or is it dynamic, or how is that working?
Right now, it's obviously very linear. What we're hoping to do in the future is for more of a, probably more of a mercenary feel. We're still trying to hash out exactly how we want to play, but probably it's going to be, you're going to have a bunch of ships that you sort of control, and you can, like, move to different star systems. But we're nowhere near there yet. Right now, our general overarching plan has four phases. The first phase, which is pretty much complete, is the drone combat / capstone. The second phase, which is where we're at now, is we're trying to figure out how to add some RTS elements, since having huge fleets is a lot more fun if you can apply strategy.
And that's the mothership mode, I'm guessing.
Correct?
Yeah, the mothership mode and play some kind of formations and other sorts of things. We're hoping to avoid, like, actual production during battles, since that always seems weird. The third phase is going to be our big content thing. That's going to be where we're going to actually flesh out the story, flesh out the campaign, make the game take more than an hour to play through, etc.
Yeah.
And the fourth phase is going to be polish and marketing and other things that haven't quite got finished at that point.
Well, it takes a long time to make a game, especially when you're doing it as an indie and not full time and all that stuff. But you guys have come a long way for much of the team being part time, I got to say. But so this is going to be single player only, right?
That's what we're currently planning. I was intrigued when they suddenly decided to change Project Zomboid to add multiplayer support.
They did?
Yeah, the new one. Supposedly you can. Well, no. It's a split screen, so like you can add another controller.
Oh. Okay, that's fine. I'm not a huge multiplayer person. For the most part, I much prefer single player, but split screen multiplayer I can totally get behind.
I don't know if we're going to do that. I make no promises. In particular, I'm really worried about the rendering cost.
Sure. Yeah.
But been considered.
Well, I could also see online multiplayer working well for that game, especially if you have, like, one person as, like, the admiral and, like, other people do the drones. You know, like, what's that, natural selection game, I think, that does that?
Yes, that was very well done.
Yeah, I haven't played it, but I've heard it was very well done. So, yeah, so that was the analogy I thought of, at least. But, yeah, so you guys just finished the first phase. So you're in the second phase. So is there a Kickstarter on the horizon at all? Or are you thinking about that? Because, I mean, there's Greenlight, but Greenlight's kind of, you know, it's...
Well, you guys have been on Greenlight for a while, right? Yeah. What's the reception been like? Do you get, like, some kind of reporting from that of how the game's doing?
Semi.
We do, but it's kind of depressing.
Oh.
Can look up numbers if you give me a second to.
No, that's cool. No, we don't need I was just wondering if like it was getting some attention or
the
if
general
it was,
theme
you know.
That we've noticed is people really seem like the people who like it do seem to really enjoy it and are looking forward to it, but it's a small fraction of the people there. So we're trying to find a way to make it appeal to a wider audience.
I think really that is in one sense our problem because if you think about it, we have a space combat game, which is a pretty niche genre.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we abandoned the traditional hard sci-fi theme, which is even more niche. So I think that's actually part of our problem.
I don't know if I would call that
a
problem.
Not in a bad way, but like it's sort of the situation we have to deal with.
Yeah, I don't know if I call that a problem because it definitely makes you guys unique. You know, because
I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the crazy Dreamcast genre of games, you know, like just stuff that could only have happened on the Dreamcast back in the day, like Crazy Taxi, you know, there is one that was out for the PlayStation 3. Unfortunately, you need a Move, which I don't have. I had the thing in my hand yesterday. I was going to buy it, but I don't have a Move, but it's called Kung Fu Rider, where it's like a downhill office chair racing game.
I saw a video of that.
It's like stuff like that. That's just for me, you know. And it's so I saw this game where there's like cupcakes flying around shooting, you know, and I was just like that. I don't care what it costs. I'm playing that game.
Oh.
So my only disappointment was that the waffle ship. It doesn't actually. It's I was wanting a TIE fighter that used waffles for the side panels.
It's a pie.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a pie.
Oh, is that? Oh, it's a pie. Okay, because it kind of
everyone makes that mistake.
I thought it was a waffle myself.
But it's good. That's good because there's still room to have a TIE fighter with waffles. So
I think we had earlier versions of the hamburger fighter had a instead of the Gundam-esque side things, they had a very TIE fighter-esque side.
Man, and you should.
We don't call it a pie fighter yet. It's called a pie bomber. I'm surprised we don't call it Pie Fighter. I think we discussed this already.
It's a Pie Bomber.
I know.
We have a pilot for it. I just linked it. He's not done, but that's what he looks like.
Yeah, I wonder if I could see it.
He's kind of like the guy, little bomb guy holding cherry bombs in his hand.
But if it's a Pie Bomber, you need like two pies side by side, right? With the
Yeah.
See, this could be dangerous if we just turn this into a brainstorming meeting, because I'm going to redesign the whole game. So.
No, Pie Bomber is actually a great name for something. That's because it's kind of punny, you know? And who doesn't love puns, you know? I mean, who doesn't love that shit? So,
we have so many puns in this game.
All you can eat.
I do love that mode, because it just throws you right into a buffet of, oh my god. Now, have you guys thought of branching out? Like, you have these main two factions. Have you thought of branching out into sub-factions, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Yes. We were talking about that yesterday to, like, the neutral party of fruit.
I keep saying that pasta should be its own faction. I mean, there's a lot of shapes. You could easily have, like, its own thing.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. You could have, like, all the different kinds of pasta, and then their mothership is actually the flying spaghetti monster. And
or a big thing lasagna with spaghetti coming out of it. Oh, and
you can start branching out to international foods, but then I feel like it might start getting a little racist. Maybe
we do have some international ish foods with the crepe thing? No, it was not crepe thing.
I don't know, maybe like dumplings that shoot rice at you or something, and like
no, it's horrible.
Oh no. Oh, wonton that shoots. Yeah, no, it's terrible. But I do love the idea of a neutral, like, mediating party that would be like health food or vegetables or fruit. That's a great idea.
Well, it can't be vegetables.
Yeah, because you already have, like, the broccoli bomber and stuff. So, yeah, it can't be vegetables. But it could be fruit. What would you do if you put fruit in there? Like, think of what would you put in there if you were using fruit?
So one idea we've had is the current like field that you fight in is around the donut planet, and we've been talking about having other systems, and the one that we've kind of probably fleshed out the most is there's one that's going to be a fruit system. And so it's going to be like a large peach with a huge chunk of it missing, so you can see the core to show that it's kind of like battle-worn, and we're thinking of having the commander there named James.
Oh no!
And yeah, so there'll be just like the other.
That is great.
Or so it looks like the peach would be kind of like a half constructed Death Star.
Correct.
And then you have like a giant lobster warp in and go, "It's a trap." And
oh no!
A lobster food, lobster dinner.
That'd be great. There are a lot of possibilities with this, aren't there?
Yes.
A lot of food.
There's a lot of food. But I do like how you've kept it to like sweets and non-sweets, or what was it, breakfast and dinner, I think.
Dessert versus dessert.
Yeah, no, I like that. No, that's a good separation, you know?
Well, the sort of joke early on is that, like, you know, dinner food is gross, and who likes broccoli? Well, dessert is this delicious, yummy thing that you just want to eat.
Yeah. So how does the gameplay actually work out as far as are you in control of a single ship, or is it just like you're flying a cupcake and you get blown away and you just the player immediately jumps into the next available ship and continues to fight?
It's what you just said, the second one.
Yeah.
Have you Have you played it, or?
Unfortunately, that came at the time that I was tearing my machine apart. Because it's like I downloaded it, and then I went through all this stuff of paving my machine over with Linux, and I've been fighting that for, I thought it was going to be a couple hours, and it's been more like 72. So.
No, I played it, and yeah, Jim, it's you fly a fighter, or you can switch to a bomber, and you're basically, I think, a drone, and so when one gets shot down. And these flimsy little things, too, so they get shot down a lot. And when one gets shot down, you just jump to the next one.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
So
Brian was telling me there's really good controller support. What other options do you have if I don't have, like, an Xbox controller hooked up to my PC?
Well, you can use the mouse and keyboard. I was recently goofing around the Razer Hydra. I'm not sure if I'm going to add that just because it's... Even though I sort of have parts of it working, it's actually a lot harder to aim while turning your wrist than it is to use a thumbstick.
Huh.
Although it is kind of cool getting a quaternion for input.
What's the what is that? What is the Razer?
The Razer Hydra.
What is that?
It's no, it's not a mouse. It's a very odd peripheral. It has a space station, and then there's these two sort of hand things that are individually tracked in space, and you also get their orientation.
Oh, that thing. Oh, you're the guy that bought one of those.
What do you mean, the guy that bought one of those?
I think you say.
No, it's just every time they put a really unique controller out like this, it's just like nobody ever seems to really get invested in them. So I'm just kind of joking, like you're that one guy that...
Actually,
but is this a fairly new thing that they're doing, or has it been around?
It's apparently been around for a year or so. I think the only game that actually, supposedly one of the few games that has good support for it is, they have a DLC for Portal 2 that has much more precise control of stuff. I haven't actually tried that yet.
There it is. Yeah, it looks kind of like a Wiimote type of
thing. Yeah, it's sort of how it works-ish, except it's a lot more precise than what I hear. It gives you the orientation and the position. And it also has thumbsticks and stuff.
So I see two of them on a base here. Do they operate individually, or it's you two-fisted?
Well, it's meant to be two-fisted, although you can operate them individually, I suppose. I mean,
okay. You know where I think that this would actually take off is once the Oculus Rift gets out publicly.
That's actually what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yes. My dev kit is still listed as processing.
Yeah, because that's going to be a thing. Like, if you guys can announce, like, we're going to be this awesome game and we're going to come out and it's going to be kicking ass on the Oculus Rift and we'll get a beta out to you, like, today. Right? Did you get an Oculus Rift and you got nothing to do with it except walk around that town? Here, play this. Right? And I think that would get you the exposure.
It's definitely something I want to do. I'm just waiting to get my dev kit before I can really do anything there. Not quite sure how. I have played around with stereoscopic rendering before. Back when I was in RIT, the summer before I graduated, I goofed around with NVIDIA 3D Vision. There's a lot of things that are subtly different in stereoscopic, but I think I have a handle on what I'm going to do with that. The thing that I'm not as sure about is the head tracking. Because unlike most of the head tracking cases I've seen, we're going to be, at least currently, we're in a sort of chase camera in third-person perspective.
Right.
Which is going to be quite different, I think. I don't know how that's going to work. We may end up adding a cockpit view if it doesn't work well.
Now, that would be funny. Like, what would the window look like on a cupcake fighter? You know? That's what I wonder. Would it be like frosting? Would it be would it have a blue hue to it, you know?
Would there be a defroster button?
Oh man.
That's right. You folks have come to the right show.
There you go. So wait. No joystick or HADA support? What?
Oh my god.
We could.
Do you know who you're talking to? Come on.
I probably should. I just don't have a joypad or a joystick thing too. Like
what?
Wait, you're making the hottest dude. The thing that's like the metal one, the metal flight stick.
It doesn't. No, that's just a term for hands on throttle and stick. So it could be anything that has a separate throttle and a joystick.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be that $500 Thrustmaster
H. Oh, okay, because that's so Brian can further niche your product.
I'm just saying,
tons of people that have a $300 joystick.
Just saying, saying it should be one of the many.
We want to niche it. What we need to do is require Oculus Rift support, but only dev kits, and then require Steel Battalion controller.
Oh gosh, because failure is a mission. It's.
I think what you got
failure is job one.
I think what you guys need to do if you really want to fail big is make this game only for the Razer Edge.
Oh my god!
Oh god!
Also including Kinect support.
Yeah.
You know what else would be amazing is the strategy. You could come out with a $10 million Kickstarter. And just be like, we're born to fail. But think all the press that you get. It'd be like, these guys with this crazy cupcake game, and they have a $10 million Kickstarter. What are they going to do? And you can be like, well, it's all about, like, you know, hookers and hot tubs and private jets here, because...
Oh, God. Open a pastry shop, and the pastry shop just sells replicas of the stuff from the game. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, crazy microtransactions, man. You can buy different icing colors and sprinkles.
Whoa, yeah, wait. Are you guys planning that? That's genius. That's like...
No, we're not going to have any kind of microtransactions.
That's fucking money right there, guys. You're leaving money on the table.
Well, no, you need to threaten terrible microtransactions.
If you want to know about 50% throttle, you need to pay 99 cents. That's how this fucking
works. Oh, my God. Have you seen... There's some review out there of this, like, Mario, or it was like a Pokemon ripoff that was Mario-esque that was, like, all kinds of traps to, like, are $100. It's like, would you like to buy more ammo? Here, pay $99.
What?
Yeah, I saw that. It's on the iPhone.
What?
It was like, it got ejected from the store pretty quick.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was... Well, did you ever see that app that it was just called I Am Rich, and it was like $300 for an app to put a dime?
It was $999.99, because that's the most they could make an app in the App Store.
And all you got to do is sell one, and you've accomplished
your mission. They sold like three or six of them or something. Why? I don't know. Just like a button you push to say I'm rich.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? Yeah, good. No microtransactions, I would think. Now, you know, this would be a good game for a tablet, though. Based on how I've played it, this would be a good game for, like, an iPad. Is that a plan?
So, I've considered a mobile route, but there's a huge problem there. Mm. And that is that I don't think they're nearly powerful enough yet.
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of crap on screen at once.
I don't actually know, though, to be fair, how powerful the new Tegra 3 or 4 or whatever are. So I could be wrong there, but right now we're stressing limits on, like, reasonably high-end PCs in some modes. I feel like if we wanted to do that, I've actually contemplated making an Android thing and, like, start experimenting with it a little bit, but the big problem is I'd have to cut down the number of things a lot, probably.
Mm.
And, I don't know, it just feels like it'd be a gimped version.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So give it 10 years and then we'll probably do it.
Or make it for the Vita. The Vita could probably run it.
I don't even want to think what a dev kit would cost.
Yeah, but the Vita's, like, desperate for games, right? So
there's a ton coming out, though. Studying it because I'm getting
one. I'm glad, I think the thing, a little bit off topic, but the thing that is going to save the Vita is the integration with the PS4.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the PS4 compared to everything else that was and wasn't at E3. I'm looking at you, Nintendo. but the stuff that, their performance at E3 guarantees there's a lot of people going to be getting PlayStations. The fact that if you get PlayStation Plus, which is pretty much a guaranteed thing that you have to do if you're going to play online.
PlayStation Plus
and they
is
give you,
sexy.
Giving you free Vita games. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I got access to this library of free games. All I got to do is go down there and get the platform.
Yep.
Okay, no brainer.
I'm getting one tomorrow, so I'm sure we'll be talking about it next week, Jim.
Okay.
So did you guys pay attention to all that madness that was E3? Did you guys pay attention to that?
I actually did not.
I saw terrible things about the Xbox One.
Oh.
I have a friend who was a really good friend of mine here at school in Boston. We're both studying music, and she works for Sony now. So she was all up in there, and she was giving me all the dirty details of the convention.
It's because of all this new console stuff. It's probably was the most exciting E3 in years. You know.
Yep. And the only thing that's really depressing is the fact that Microsoft doesn't support self-publishing, which is like the number one thing about indie games, is you want to be able to self-publish.
Right.
Don't they have, are they getting rid of Xbox Live Arcade or whatever?
No, they're getting rid of it.
No, it's gone. Self-publishing is out of the question now, so.
Yeah.
What?
So, hey, if you want to patch a game, that's $10,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like Microsoft said, about
you have to sell your soul
people that want to play
Microsoft, pretty much is what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft's best line at the whole thing in the press conference was whenever somebody asked them, they said, "Well, what about people that want to play offline?
Oh my
or
god,
don't have internet."
And
they said,
"Get an Xbox 360."
Yeah, he says, "We have a console for that. It's called the Xbox 360." It was like, drop the mic and just walk away. Right?
No, my favorite line was that it was that same guy, and he was like, "Why are people complaining about the price? We're over-delivering value.
Holy
crap. For $500 with our integrated tech." Yeah, that's what I said. We are over-delivering. I wish I could make this up.
See, the really sad thing about that is the only useful part of the Kinect is that you can use it as a PC peripheral.
You can?
Yeah,
well,
totally.
With some driver hacking.
Huh. I didn't know
as
that.
Me and David discovered in one horrible, horrible class.
Okay, spill. Go. What happened?
Oh god!
So, well, it's fun for robotics.
It was emerging themes. It was taught by the heck was his name?
Jacobs.
Yes, Professor Jacobs, Stephen Jacobs. And normally the class covers emerging themes and different like new technologies and stuff. But our year we covered the Kinect, and this was also alongside several other major courses that were like giant time sinks. And the criteria for what Professor Jacobs wanted every week changed. And yeah, the Kinect APIs were really, most of them were like basically Linux hacked driver thingies, sort of things. And then the best we were trying to use those on Windows.
So yeah, we were using all the like indie hacked developed ones. And about a week after the class ended, the official Microsoft SDK came out.
It was special.
To
this day, we still hate the Kinect.
Well, the thing that amazes me, it's like my wife had to have one, right? Because she's like, I want to get the yoga thing and that. And it's what makes me crazy about it is when it shows you on the, you know, you can see like the little inset picture in a picture, and it will show you to yourself. And I can see that it sees me quite well. So it's not a defect of can the Kinect make me out in the room. I blame like software side that they've got the image. They're just not doing the right things with it because all the games that came out and tried to support it, it was just, kind of not so great. So I'm wondering if because the box this time will have the processor to actually contemplate the imagery that it's getting, if it can do anything. Or will it just upload it to the NSA?
My suspicion is that it's probably partially the current vision computer vision issues, and trying to get them to work in a real time system with as dynamic of an environment. We noticed that, like, we were using it in our experiments that, like, it does not like sweaters. it really does not like rolly chairs. It would, like, treat them as contorted people, and it would just be
weird,
messy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I remember.
Which is really annoying, because we were testing it in a lab full of rolly chairs. I was like, goddamn.
I remember when me and my girlfriend have it, and she has two dogs, and they would jump up on the couch, and the freaking Kinect would, like, we would be playing a game or something, right? And the dog would jump on the couch, and then, boom, game over. Stupid dog gets picked up. I don't know, it picked up, it thought everything was a person, and it was pretty funny.
Oh, no. So, when's the Kinect version of Galactos coming out, guys?
Once we start making too much money off of it, and we'll get on that.
Kinect edition, right?
Hey, if they can have Kinect Star Wars.
Well, then we might do it once they start suing us for, like, causing obesity problems. They'll be our
oh, yeah. Oh, my God. You guys, you're going to be outlawed in New York. They're not.
Oh, God.
You're not going to be able to even sell the game because it'll have to. You know, that's a thing. You could actually have like a nutrition label as the back of the box.
We you know actually, what? You know? Maybe we can take on Hostess and bring them back to life. You know, we can have them.
Million years later, Twinkies awakened.
One of our fake slogans was Galactose. I gained 5 pounds.
Oh, nice. No, you should make like you know how a lot of these games have like the ancient ones. They're coming back, you know what I mean? Like, that's where all the hyperdrive technology came from, and they disappeared millions of years ago, and we have no idea where they went. The Twinkies would be the ancient ones. And Galactus.
The Zelnaga, or whatever.
The precursors, or whatever.
And the search for the lost Twinkies.
Hey, that could be the
sequel. Go to the hidden universe of Hostess or something.
That would be that'd be the first person add-on where you actually have to get out of your ship and run around.
No, it's it's Galactos 3, the search for Spork.
No. What?
I feel like the problem with this plan is we'd be sued out of existence pretty quickly.
Well, you know what? That also is probably a good way to get press, right? Because if you just
get sued out of existence.
Yeah, just mention Twinkies or something in there and get, like, Hostess to like, throw a cease and desist at you. And then that'll get, you know, just be like, yeah, I was never in the game anyway.
We have, just, like threaten. Rip off, like, Galactos, Lean Cuisine Edition, or Galactos. I'm loving it.
my favorite was So Bake We All.
Galactos.
Don't fake we all. But yeah, then like you'll get sued and be like, fuck it, I'm open sourcing this bitch. Drop microphone.
Oh my god, having Starbucks. That's a no brainer.
That'd be an add on, the caffeine add on. There you go.
No, you could actually have a cup of coffee that's named Starbucks and it could be
You would probably get sued by both Starbucks and Universal.
You know, I just realized if we did get really big, can you imagine all the product placement requests we would get for this game?
Oh my god, it would be like NASCAR. Right? It would be like NASCAR.
It'd be terrible and funny. Yeah,
it would
That's
be awesome.
Like if we ruled the world, would Starbucks ever be like, please put a cup of coffee in your game?
Yep. Oh, and don't forget, you can piss off Matt Groening.
Donuts.
Jesus.
Just bring Homer right in.
Who did that? Who's?
That was me.
Oh, so that's your fault. Okay.
Yes.
So how did this current team come together? What was the process of bringing all y'all together into what's the current family of Galactus right now?
See, it started off as me and John, one other developer who kind of disappeared early in. During Capstone, we recruited two artists, although after John and I graduated, they're still there, so...
I'm sorry, what
they
is...
graduated.
What is Capstone?
So it's the last course in the graduate game design and Master of Game Design.
It's basically the equivalent of our, thesis.
Yeah.
Oh. So you guys have, master's degrees?
Yes.
Oh, so
well, me and David.
We're talking to some smart motherfuckers up in here, aren't we?
You bet.
I don't know where that came from. I think I channeled Dave Chappelle or something for a nanosecond. That was a really bad idea. Anyway. Wow. Okay, so you guys met in your graduate program, David and John.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
What about the other ones? What about you, Matthew?
Well, they found me on Open Game Art, which is a royalty-free, basically open to use whatever tracks on that website. It's pretty much, I think it's art too, not just music, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it has 3D, 2D audio. It's cool.
Yeah, and
if you're
also,
looking for free stuff, you should definitely check it out.
Oh, really?
Now I'm kind of sponsored by them because they have me on the front page on Open Game Art now because I'm a big contributor to their site in music. So I've been getting a lot of emails from that site, but that's pretty much how they found me when I first started on Open Game Art. They were looking for a track and, you know, they're just like, hey, we found your music on the site. They want to use it. So, and then after that, I started saying hey, you know, maybe I can work on making the music fit better or just, you know, make something new. And that's just how it came about.
Awesome.
It's funny. We originally didn't think we were going to get permission to use the songs we asked. Because they were some OST from another game, initially.
Initially, but not anymore.
Oh, what? Okay, can you say what game?
Yeah, it was this RTS game called Ruined Regions or something, and it was something like different planets were the different factions, something like that. It was like a science fiction RTS. It was pretty cool, but I think the developer just, he didn't have enough time on his hands to do it anymore.
Mm.
It was a one-man show, so he just kind of gave up. It's pretty, I'm assuming it's really hard to make a game on your own, 100% by yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I know one guy who's making a space game called Limit Theory, and it's pretty much, at least it started just him. I think he's got a little help now. But,
I think last I heard he had an artist /whatever person to help him.
Yeah, I think you're right. But still, that just doing all that crap by yourself, or just even with one other person,
Reading his work log is really depressing sometimes because he's like, I just revamped everything. I'm like, God damn it.
It's sad, but it's awesome. There's a reason Chris Roberts backed his particular Kickstarter, but I can't imagine he instills confidence in others.
Have you tried the Limit Theory prototype?
I didn't kick that high. In the Kickstarter. I wish I had, but I didn't. Did you? Have you?
Yeah. I played the first version of it that they put out and the prototype thing, and it was kind of cool. Then I was like, I don't want to get distracted with this.
That's the
problem. I felt like it needed cheat codes because I didn't want to spend enough time building up.
Yeah. That's the problem. There's just so much to play right now. There's just so much to play. Even just space games, there's so much to play.
It's really weird when you think about it. Like, 2 years ago, the number of, like, flight simulator space shooters that you could play that weren't, like, 5 years old was very, very limited.
Right.
There was, like, 3 on Steam that I can think of. It was, like, Soul Exodus.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the...
Evacron.
Oh, my God, I played the crap out of that game.
And then there's the X series.
Yeah, yeah, the X series.
And then there's, like, older ones like Battlefront 2 and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. When I started the site, I thought most of my time was going to be to playing the classics with the occasional, you know, new game thrown here and there. It's been the complete opposite, which is great, but just surprising as hell, you know? I mean,
it's a good problem.
No, it is a good problem. I mean, hell, the Star Citizen Kickstarter just passed $10 million, like, last week.
I thought their Kickstarter ended.
It did, but they were still crowdfunding on their site.
We should probably get around to backing that.
Yeah, because if you want lifetime insurance for your ship, I think you have to do it for the fall.
The thing that turned me off slightly on that one was the idea of multiplayer. Not because multiplayer is bad, but I played Eve and... Intimidated by the...
This is not going to be anything like Eve. I can just tell you right off. Eve is... It's a giant spreadsheet. It's like work. It's... I know people who love it, and more power to them, but...
Well, the thing that drew me to Eve initially was the concept of giant player-driven wars.
Yeah.
Like, we want to invade your space because we want your stuff. Mm. Not because you're a different faction, because we want your stuff.
Yeah, or we don't like you, or just whatever, you know.
Sadly, I discovered I was too risk-averse for that, so...
Yeah, me too. Like,
hair-bared.
Yeah, no, when I was in there, all I wanted to do was explore, probe, and mine. That's all I wanted to do. But no, we had to get war-decked all the time.
War-decks? Oh, my God.
God damn it, I just want to mine. Leave me alone. I just want to mine.
You could stay in the NPC Corp, but...
But then, like... The fun of that game is having other people to talk to. That's where the fun comes from. If you're in an NPC core, it's
well, there is local.
Yeah, but those are random fucknuts, and I don't want to talk to a bunch of random fucknuts.
You can make a private chat and invite your friends. Fair enough, though.
I guess.
Ryan, do you have friends?
A couple here and there, maybe. One somewhere back in Pennsylvania. I don't know. Maybe. So you guys said you're in Boston, some of you?
That's me. That's just me.
Oh, okay.
I'm in New York City.
Oh, nice.
Directly all over. I'm down in Florida.
And I'm in Alaska.
Oh, so most of you guys are well ahead of me, and I'm in L.A., and Mignon, you're, what's that, 1 or 2 hours behind?
What time is it where you are?
It's about 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock? It's almost 7 here.
Oh, so you're an hour behind.
Yes.
I'm going to be moving to San Francisco.
Oh, nice.
I'm studying film scoring, and film scoring is a pretty big thing. Oh. I mean, if I really wasn't into video games, I'd probably be living in L.A. doing music for feature films and stuff like that.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm currently just working freelance for any type of media. But I really want to do games more so than films. But I'll take whatever, you know.
Yeah, we did a whole show on game music a while back because I'm a soundtrack nut.
Yeah.
So do you like any particular movie or game soundtracks? Any that inspire you?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Alan Silvestri. You know Alan Silvestri?
I know the name, but I'm not placing what he's done. But I know
He's done Forrest Gump.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, and he did, like, some of the recent stuff he's done was, like, Avengers, for example. He did that. Oh, I mean, it's pretty generic kind of soundtrack, but he has a lot of good stuff. But, I mean, a really big influence was, you know, Final Fantasy VII when I was a kid. That's actually what inspired me to start learning how to, you know, learn music in the first place.
Really?
And, you know, yeah, like, 2 years ago, I actually got to have dinner with Nobuo, the music composer for all the Final Fantasy games.
What?
What?
Oh, wow.
I'm so jealous.
He came to anime. He came to Anime Boston to do a talking, but then he realized, oh, this music school is here, Berklee College of Music. I'm like 1 year from. I mean, sorry, one semester from graduating.
Cool.
Anyways, he did a talk at our school just for the film scoring and people interested in game music. And then after that, the teacher was like, hey, you guys want to all hang out and have dinner? And I was like, holy shit, yes. You know, the guy who totally inspired me to do music in the first place, like, this guy needs to know this, you know. So he doesn't really speak English, so we had a translator, which is one of my best friends. And it was because I'm friends with that translator. You know, that's what he was the one who actually invited him to come over to Massachusetts to do his, you know, speaking thing. Yeah.
I have to admit, one of my favorite movie soundtracks is actually the soundtrack to Crawl by James Horner.
James Horner's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. Well, I didn't realize, like, because I do a bad movie.
I didn't know he did Crawl.
It's called that.
I didn't
you know what?
Yeah. No. Well, I do this bad movie show, right? So we're looking at, you know, we're watching like Star Crash and Crawl and all these crappy movies, and it's like I start looking at, well, who wrote it, who directed it, who was in, you know, whenever you go like just beyond the stars and the director, it's like, well, who did the script treatments and these things, and then you start to see a pattern, right? But then James Horner would event, you know, every now and then he'll just pop up in some kind of movie. And it's like, wow, the only redeeming thing in this movie was the soundtrack. And it was epic. Like, how the hell did they do that? And then it turns out it's like somebody like Jim Horner was doing it. Is he still around?
Yeah,
or
he's still around.
I don't know if he's like,
yeah. Well, you know, what's funny? He did the, like, it's pretty bad soundtrack, but it was, I don't know if you guys really noticed, but the latest Spider-Man movie that came out.
Didn't see it. Looked terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when I was watching it, I was like, this soundtrack is so not happening for me. Like, if you can notice, like, people that don't really understand music that well, that don't really have a, you know, like a sense for it, I guess. People that didn't really understand that stuff, they were noticing that the music was kind of off, and that's a really bad thing. You know what I mean? Because you're not really supposed to notice the music. It's supposed to just be there in the background, helping the scene, whatever. And then, you know, the music was so bad. Okay, at one point it was like one of those, like, hiding scenes where, like, they're hiding from a bad guy, right?
Yeah.
And then literally there was a part where in the music and the score, someone just, like, put all of their arms on the piano and smashed it. Like, just a random chord.
What?
That's literally what... Yeah, it was so bad. Anyways, then I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, who the heck did the music for this? And it was James Horner. And I was just like, what?
Well, what? You know, every now and then someone needs a house payment. You know, I guess.
Yeah,
that's...
I know. I mean, he pops up in the most random things, but then, like, whenever I see James Horner, like, featured in the beginning of the movie, then I'm just like, okay, yeah, this is good. And then in that movie, he wasn't actually, his name wasn't in the front menu, in the front titles. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, he did just, like, an epic job with Wrath of Khan, right?
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek II.
But then soundtrack after that by him kind of sounded like Wrath of Khan.
Well,
it
yeah,
did.
I think it's because everybody said, do that. Make that again.
I mean, that right? was an amazing soundtrack, but come on, every soundtrack since.
James Horner knows what he's doing because you remember Titanic, right? They did not want to pay him for that. They didn't want James Horner on the soundtrack to Titanic. He didn't want to do it either. The initial soundtrack for Titanic didn't sell at all, like, to the producers. So he was like, you know what? I'll write this awesome song, and here's the deal. You can pay me nothing for it, but I want the money for the sales of that one song.
Oh, God. And was that the Celine Dion song?
Yeah. He made so much money.
He wrote that?
Yeah, he wrote that. And he wrote it knowing that it was going to make – that was his deal. He was like, you know what? I'll just get the money from the song. And they're just like, psh. No film composer makes money off selling a song. So he knows what he's doing.
And you couldn't get away from that fucking song. People got arrested for playing that song over and over again because the cops got called on them.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake. Oh, my God. So how many tracks have you done for Galactos now?
I think right now they're using some of the stuff that I've done, not for other projects, but just work I've done that kind of fits well with the game. I think later on in development, when we actually get really somewhere with, you know, all the other game modes, I'm really going to start digging into making more original stuff. But I have this, the one track they really liked was from that other game, Ruined Regions, and it was pretty much orchestral, this big orchestral epic thing. And then I kind of, you know, put some sugar sprinkly sounds on it to make it sound more like galactose, and I think it turned out pretty good.
Oh, cool.
It's the one you hear. John, I don't know where it plays. I think it plays in the first tutorial mission, right?
I think so. It's in the folder. It's the theme of Aggro Galactose Edition.
Yeah.
It's not MP3 because we didn't want to license MP3. Apparently it costs like $2,500 to license the MP3 patents or some crap.
Yeah, when you...
What?
Yeah. So we just decided not to use MP3.
MP3, the license is you can sell 50,000 units and then you pay the license. So
is
we
it 50,
can use
000?
It. It is 50,000.
I think, but that's the 50,000 distributed thing. So like, I think if we have to keep track of downloads and I just like, whatever.
That's why we keep our listener numbers low, because we don't want them to come with.
Oh yeah, they're OGG files.
I think it's actually not the fact that it's in the format. It's the fact that it's decoding it. Oh. Like, I don't think there's any. I can't imagine there'd be any problem. Like assuming you have a licensed encoder or whatever.
Yeah, OGG is a future MP3 file. It does everything MP3 wish it could, and it's open to use. Like it's. You don't have to pay a stupid license fee. It's not owned by some random-ass country in Europe.
Yeah, it's just that I think the problem is that the MP3 has become the cultural term for a music file. So in order to break that, you know, and it's like, oh, well, when I say MP3s, like I'm listening to my MP3s, I really mean my AUGs.
Or my FLAC.
You know? Yeah. So I think there's a hurdle to get over there because MP3 just has so much traction.
The good thing is that the patents are going to expire soon.
Good.
My understanding is that they published large parts of the standard in like 1991 in a public document when they had a draft of the MPEG video or something. And so that theoretically means that most of the patents should expire, although there's apparently some submarine patents that are still around and other shenanigans. But sometime in the next 10 years, hopefully we'll see it become a free standard. It's my understanding anyways.
I had no idea it wasn't.
Yeah, it's really shocking once you learn that, actually. Although, odd question is, FMOD out of the box can play MP3. Now, the fun question is, we're not going to use MP3 in our game because of, like, cost things. But what if someone, you know, what if we have in the future the ability to include custom songs and someone decides to make a user content thing that has an MP3? Because FMOD is just going to play it unless we, like, don't decide not to, like, specifically filter out MP3 or something, which would be just weird.
I don't know. Some people do that anyways. I mean, they'll just mute the music track and listen to whatever music while they're playing.
Oh, no. I mean, like, if someone includes an MP3 file in, like, user content or something, do we have to pay then? I mean,
no, I don't think so.
No, it doesn't.
But I mean, it just really begs the question of why do we have to pay if we include one ourselves and use it?
I guess
because we're selling.
Yeah, because it's included in a commercial product.
Yeah, for commercial use. Yeah. You can use MP3 if you're not using it for commercial purposes.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, that was a stupid comment. Never
mind. 50,000 units sold is a lot. Some people don't even expect to do that. I mean, I've done a bunch of soundtracks. I tell them, I'm like, you know, there's a licensing issue with MP3, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm just like, okay, well, that's on you. That's your lawsuit, not mine.
Well,
even though it's...
I mean, if you reach 50,000 copies and you're selling it for, like, you know, $10, you can probably afford that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I had no idea you had to pay for that nonsense.
Yeah, and it's an awkward thing, too, when you do, like, iTunes sales, but it's not really MP3, because I have a couple tracks on iTunes, and they don't ask for MP3s. They ask for the raw, uncompressed format, and then they, in turn, will do the converting through the iTunes store. Yeah.
What's, like, so would that be, like, a WAV file?
Yeah,
that the raw?
WAV file. That's the raw.
Okay.
Raw and compressed is awesome. I wish everything could use it. I mean, a lot of games use that for sound effects, because... you know, like a 0.5-second sound effect doesn't take up much space, whereas, like, a 3-minute song will take up, like, 30 megs.
Yeah, that's the problem with WAV files. They take up a shit ton of space.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had for a while, one of our tracks was WAV, and it was, like, something like a quarter of our download. I eventually got around to replacing it with I was like, okay, VLC, you're going to reconvert this.
Yeah, AUG files are pretty nice. I like FLACs too, but they're also huge. That's the problem.
Well, they're lossless-ish.
Ish?
I mean, that's, well, okay, they're lossless. I think they use compression, but they're lossless. So they're still ridiculous. Apparently MP3 is very lossy, but supposedly tries to use something that's less lossy and where we can hear it. But audiophiles seem to hate it.
Hey, we need to link to the alpha that you guys have up, because I was actually right just playing it.
I'll put it in the show notes. Download.
Okay. Because it was like, well, I had it downloaded, I just hadn't had a chance to fire it up because I didn't have the Visual C stuff. So I installed that while you guys were talking about the music and stuff, and I was just like flying around in the All You Can Eat. That game is hella fun.
Right? You were just playing it just now. Why?
Yeah, I was hoping that I didn't have to unmute my mic and talk, because it's just like, well, I'm trapped in the window, right? It's got my mouse, but the controls work very well.
Yeah.
And it's just the mouse, right? So it's just the mouse wheel up and down for throttle and the shooting's pretty precise. So yeah, it's absolutely as fun as it looks.
Yeah. No, it totally is. So let's see. We got the background of John, Matthew, and David. So Mignon, we don't have your background. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came on the team.
I came on the team by Matthew finding me. Cause I don't know. He said that there was something on a forum or on Greenlight where somebody commented that the artwork needed to be beefed up or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they were looking for a different artist, and Matthew's the one that found me. And that's
I think it was more like I kind of passed it around to my friends who were also like, I have a lot of friends through networking, like, who are all in game development of all, you know, shapes and sizes. Like, I have some people working in the professional industry, a lot in the indie industry.
Okay.
And yeah, there was a lot of feedback about some of the artwork, and it's like, you know, this game's pretty refined, except the art could, like, you know, it would, that's kind of someone's first impression when they first see it, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, so then I started to reach out, like, maybe, cause, you know, I'm pretty active on Newgrounds. And I posted something, and I was like, does anyone, you know, want to check this game out? Maybe draw some art for us? And, you know, I was talking to John. I was like, you know, maybe I can go and outsource for you. Like, I was, like, looking around for people. And he's like, okay, sure, whatever. So then, you know, there were several artists who I talked to. And she kind of stuck out, like, a lot more. Because she was doing, I think it was kind of funny, because she was doing concept art for a space game at the time, or some sort of science fiction thing.
What?
And so I think that was really fitting. And I was like, you know, you want to take a shot at this? She drew this really awesome, like, concept art for the title screen, I guess. I sent it to John, and then we added her into our little family immediately because it was just too good.
So what were you working on? What was the sci-fi spacey thing that you were working on?
Well, it's actually somebody's animation that they wanted to do. So it wasn't a video game. It just was another little indie group that wanted to do their own sci-fi.
I'm no longer interested. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally
no, I'm not
totally
going to talk
kidding.
About it.
I'm totally kidding. Go ahead.
That's all, is that it just kind of had a spacey theme.
You know, you got to be a fan of spacey things if you're a fan of space games, you know. That can't really have one without the other. But
So how did you end up in Alaska, and can you indeed see Russia from
Oh
there.
My gosh. I was born in Alaska, and I've almost always lived here, but I've been around and lived in the lower 48 for a little bit. There is a couple spots where you can see Russia in Alaska, but I live in Anchorage and I cannot see Russia. So that's a common, I don't live in an igloo either. I live in a house.
I think one time when me and her first talked to each other, I don't know if it was you or some other friend I had from Alaska. I think it was you. But I asked her if she likes moose, like if she eats it. And I was like,
yeah.
And then she didn't talk to me for like, I don't know, a day or two. And I was like, I'm sorry, did I offend you?
I actually hate moose.
Was that you?
Yeah, I remember you asking me that.
Is that a thing up there?
It's a huge thing up here.
Oh,
but
wow.
I hate it. It tastes really bad to me.
That's kind of like a delicacy up there, like Spam is in Hawaii, apparently. It's kind of like that.
No, it's not a delicacy. It's like there's moose everywhere. And Alaska has the stereotype, or at least I think the lower 48 has the stereotype that Alaska is kind of like fish and game and hunters, and that is so true.
I watched that show. What is that show? Alaska State Troopers?
State Troopers.
I love that show.
That is not how Alaska is.
That's like middle of nowhere Alaska is, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We have a lot of like old ancient type villages where everything is super old school. Like they still run around in muck tucks and harpoon whales. No kidding. But that is nowhere near where I live.
So is it actually more expensive to live there because a lot of stuff has to be imported from the lower 48?
Yes.
Or, you know, because I would think like out in the bush towns and stuff where they don't even have roads, right? So they have to fly supplies in. That would be almost prohibitive. Like, what's the economy? What would people do in a tiny town like that?
In a tiny town, everything is imported, and there's a lot of little airports up here that fly to the different stations and stuff we have up here to drop off like their daily necessities. But those little villages and stuff really do a lot of their own fishing and and things. But no, food is crazy expensive there. Like, I bought a cup of coffee in one of the villages that I was visiting. You have to fly to some of these. You can't drive. You have to dog sled or fly. And I flew. And I bought a cup of coffee and it was $8.
Holy dang. Shit.
What?
But I don't know.
You can get a...
That's almost Starbucks.
So you can get a thing of coffee beans for that price.
Well, this was just a 16-ounce latte.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I live in Anchorage, and it's like $4.50. I don't know what it is for you guys down there.
About that-ish. In LA, at least, yeah.
Anchorage is not... Whatever you guys are thinking right now, Anchorage is not that...
It's
pretty much like any other community, except like massively overrun by coffee shops and pastry shops.
Yeah. Well, what's the industry there other than like game and tourism and that? So I know there's oil and that in some places, but it's like where I grew up, we had steel mills and factories and stuff like that. And that's what generated the income. But then I look at a place, if you're like remote on the edge of the northern wilderness, what can you do there that generates the money that you need to buy that expensive food?
Well, Anchorage,
like, what's the export?
Anchorage is really like almost any other city down there. I mean, we developed differently than you guys, so we don't have like the Target right next to the Sports Authority, right next to the blah, blah, blah. It's different. I mean, we didn't even have a Target until a couple of years ago. But our main, I'd say, is airports. Like, we have a lot of stations where a lot of airlines base themselves. Also, BP bases themselves in Alaska. Their main office is up here.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not
and
a good
being,
thing.
For being a resident of the state, don't you get, like, a yearly dispensation because of the oil and stuff? Do they do that like for everybody that's a state citizen or what?
Yeah, if you are a citizen born here, you get some money every year, but I think that has to do with our initial price of gas and oil is crazy expensive, and they pay us back for how expensive it is, even though it's coming from our bloody state.
Well, you know, like whenever I moved close to the East Coast and I thought, hey, man, I'm living on the coast. I'm going to have access to seafood. Like, seafood on the coast is twice as expensive as if you're like somewhere where they have to truck it in. It made no sense to me.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's...
there you're like on top of the oil and you pay double for it.
Yeah. Seafood is actually pretty common and it depends on where you go, but like seafood's a norm. But yeah, how much is gas for you guys? Where you guys are?
About $4.
That's
$4.
Yeah, it's like about $3.40 here.
$3.40.
Wow. In Virginia, well, my hometown. I don't drive in Boston because that's really dumb.
Yeah, I've heard it's even worse than LA, which is bad. LA is very bad.
LA is just like the freeways and highways and stuff. It's just a bad situation. The thing is, Boston is really, it's a really old city, right?
Right.
And so that was, you know, like in London or whatever, just like European countries back in the day, like how they did their big cities was like everything's like in a circle. You know what I mean? Like there's no intersections. It's just all the main street is like a curve. So pretty much here, they adapted that system. Not a roundabout. I hate those traffic circles.
We have those all over.
They're terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So the road people who are native to Boston still can't figure out how the roads work here. It's ridiculous. There's no like straight grid like New York City. Like it goes by numbers or whatever, you know, incrementally as you go further down. Here, no. Everything has some random ass name and everything's not straight. And then everything eventually will turn into one way road and then curve out and go somewhere else. It's really bad. It's confusing.
Yeah, there's a great meme. It's like, first there's a picture of a map of New York. It's like New York, because we want you to find where you're going easily and efficiency. And then there's a map of Boston that says Boston, because fuck you.
Yeah, so I don't drive here. I use like a car. I use a Zipcar around here. But back home in Virginia, it's better. In Virginia, I live near D.C., so even D.C. is better because it's numbers, states, or letters. It doesn't get any easier than that. Like a big street that's really important, it's named after a state or something like that. And then, you know, it's going horizontal, it's letters, going vertically, it's numbers. So letters and numbers makes complete sense.
Yeah, I'm from Ohio where we killed the Indians in the trees and then named our streets after them. So...
That's a comforting thought. Yeah, LA is its own little brand of hell, but I love it so much. So is it tough work? Y'all are in like these weird time zones and three of you are in like one time zone and one of you is another. Does that make it hard to work together?
I wouldn't say so, but I mean,
scheduling a meeting gets troublesome. We meet at like 11 p.m. on Sundays.
Oh, it's good you have meetings. We're going to wrap this up soon, but I wanted to ask, what are the timelines we're looking at? Do you guys have one? Like, because right now, I'm going to be honest, I got to ask, why hasn't there been a new release in 3 months? Let me just throw that out there. What's going on?
Well, a lot of what we've been working on is sort of design-wise.
Mm.
There's been stuff going, I'm the only one who's sort of full-time, and I've had a lot of stuff going on in my life, so I haven't been able to get much done.
Mm, okay. I'll blame you then.
And although we have some stuff, like it's just there's not enough to really justify a new release yet. We probably could add some new stuff. Like I've added a thing where it like tries to the shields don't take forever to start showing up type of thing, but it's just not. I feel like it would just distract people. Like, oh, we have a new build. What's new?
It's mostly not... been design work rather than implementation.
Okay, that makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah, I was kind of disturbed that the website hadn't been updated since, like, December. You know, so if you could just get, like, a screenshot or something up there, or like,
you mean the blog?
Yeah, the blog.
Oh, that's
it was showing,
really
like...
really out of date.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is, like, if you go to Greenlight and then it tracks back to the blog...
Yeah, fair
enough.
Isn't
that the path that it goes? So it's kind of like people could be like, well, am I going to Greenlight it? Oh, well, they haven't done anything since December. Maybe it's dead.
He raises a good point, people.
Okay.
That is a good point.
Because we've learned a lot from talking to people that deal with Kickstarters, right? And the Kickstarter thing is, like, continuous updates, you know, because we found, mm-hmm. like, the people that have Kickstarters, and if they're not updating at least once or twice a week, then the Kickstarter just falls right off because people assume, you know, like, hey, there's nothing happening here. So.
Exactly.
And I don't think that you'd have to be that aggressive with it because you're not trying to draw money out of people right now. So, but it would just be a thing of just being like, hey guys, we're still alive.
You okay. Know? So I guess
things
we'll
are,
just
things
ask
are
homework.
Happening.
Well, at homework. Someone has to post every week.
You know, at the bare minimum, once a month, just like a progress update would probably be sufficient.
Or put recipes for various.
We actually
like,
thought about adding recipes. At the end of the game, like how to make cupcakes.
That is a fabulous idea. That is serious. And that's what you're fighting for. You're fighting to get to the end so you can get those recipes.
Hey, you could have like a Duncan Hines cake mix box as an aircraft carrier that launches the... You know, honestly, Brian and I, we're from the Ministry of Bad Ideas, and we can do this all night. So,
wow.
Back on the topic of lawsuits.
We were going to have a... like the enemy boss be like some kind of giant stove oven thing. Well, we never quite got around to doing that.
I love it.
Dr. Diabetes.
Oh, that's also a great idea.
With just a big floating disembodied Wilford Brimley head, and they call it the Diabetes.
I'm sorry.
And it shoots lasers out its eyes. And
that's awesome. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to wrap this up. It's kind of, you know, at least for me, getting a little late because I get up early in the morning. But I want to thank you all for taking the time to talk with us for about an hour and a half. That's a good length. We're both very excited about Galactus. I'm glad you finally got to play it a little bit now, Jim. But we're very excited about the game, and I'm glad we can give it some press.
I was just shocked at how much shit is going on the screen.
I was telling you, man. I was telling you, the ship count is insane.
Yeah, it's just like it's a giant Zerg rush of cupcakes and pies.
And it's great.
Oh, God.
It is so great. Okay, man. Well, everyone, have a great night. Everyone, thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you have any questions or comments or anything, leave them below in the comments. Contact us at hail@spacegamejunkie.com or leave comments on our iTunes page. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.
Down, but I see the only one. Trying to think I'm over you. I find I've just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no warmth in the light. And how I miss those desert skies.